Recording is on.
Awesome. Great. Well, we've been looking forward to this topic for a while, and we have Alex and Anchor here today to talk to us about DID linked resources specification and the I think the work item that they have in mind around that. I did a little bit of reading, but I'm going to let them give you the whole scoop. Just a couple of housekeeping items before I turn it over, Alex, to you all. But I'm going to make it quick because I think we're going to have a really good discussion today. So first of all, I just want to remind everyone, as we do every week, that this meeting really adheres to the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct that the W3C has put out. And a link to that is found in the agenda. Reminder that everyone has the best intentions at the core. Also, we are glad to have anyone who is here to participate in these calls. However, anything that is a substantial contribution needs to be made by someone who is a full member of the CCG, which is very easy to do. The links to that are also in the agenda, and it just requires filling out an agreement. There is no cost to be a member of the CCG. Also, we do keep a record of these meetings, both minutes and recording. The Jitsi chat will be used to manage the conversation and dialogue as we continue. So if you have something you'd like to say, please add yourself to the queue using Q+. And with that, that takes care of the little formula, and I wanted to do introductions and reintroductions. Do we have anybody today who is joining us for the first time or rejoining us and would like to give us an update on what they've been up to? Now is your opportunity. Okay. How about announcements and reminders? There we go. Manu, let me have you go ahead.
Sure. Hey, everyone. As many of you know, we had a verifiable credentials working group face-to-face meeting last week in Miami, and it was good. We got some stuff done. Tried to summarize, do a fair summarization of the outcome of the meeting last week, and I wrote that up in an email. So I won't dwell too much, on that, here, but just be aware that, you know, there were some decisions made last week that, will hopefully help, verifiable credentials, become, even broader and things of that nature. I think the biggest decision, that was probably made was that, you know, the core data model will, you know, continue to be JSON-LD and context, will continue to be mandatory. But, the working group, opened up the aperture for other data formats, that, as long as they can map to the core data model, can be considered a part of the verifiable credentials ecosystem. So this is very much, you know, a part of this kind of big tent approach that was under discussion, and it looks like that's the direction that the working group's going to go. The other thing is I got the holder binding thing totally wrong, so thank you to Oliver for correcting me and adding a lot of detail to that discussion. Other things that happened was the JSON Web Signature JWS 2020 specification was abandoned in favor of using DCJOT, and then dataset canonicalization and the EDDSA Cryptid Suite continues. And there's also work around simplifying how we talk about other specifications in the ecosystem. So there's this desire to basically, without judgment, just list all the specifications that people are working on, the stuff that, Anchor, is talking about today, potentially being just, you know, something that we point to, and just going on from there without as much value judgment as we were putting in, for example, in like the DID specifications registry. So again, we're trying to open up the aperture to point to more people's good work in the area and, make less value judgments around, things. That's it for that update.
Thanks, Manu. I feel like that sounds like it was a really productive time. And I also wanted to thank you for putting that that summary out into the group. That was really helpful. So Kalia, I think you're up next.
Yeah, I'll start out with working group updates. Myself, Dimitri, and Derek, who co-chair the Secure Data Store Working Group, are all stepping down as co-chairs. Partly because the encrypted data vault work has stabilized and is people aren't meeting because folks are so busy implementing, which is great. And the decentralized web node work, it seems like, is continuing. So if folks are interested in co-chairing that group, there are positions open. I think we'll work with DIF staff to run an election in that group, although it's jointly chartered with CCG. So that's that update. There's next week, I'm along with Heidi, who I run IAW with, we're going to Thailand to run the APAC Digital Identity Unconference, and it's not too late to register if you want to join, or you have staff in the region who wants to join us in Bangkok. And then, 2 weeks after that is the Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop, which is one day, March 16th. I've already, Kim Hamilton Duffy has registered, which is great to see. And we have folks coming from the Office of Biometric Identity Management, which hosts a 200 million entry biometric database for the United States government. So they're coming. It's going to be an interesting day, along with like several civil society groups who've written reports in the area. And finally, IAW is April 18th to 20th. And if you want to come and you have difficulty with our pricing, please don't hesitate to reach out. We're committed to accessibility and even have some, I think we still have a scholarship or two open for folks who need them to get resources to travel. Anyways, thank you.
Great. Thanks, Kalia. I will look forward to your update on the Thoughtful Biometrics conference. We'll have to have you definitely give us a rundown of that. Sounds very interesting. Joe, I think you're next.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to add some nuance to the Big Tent conversation Manu mentioned. There's definitely interest in extending what VCs are to larger conversations. However, all that we spoke about at the VCWG was what that working group is going to be working on in terms of its base media types and how we might structure being able to interoperate or transform between a base type and types that may be securing that. And there is an option that other groups can define ways that you secure VCs, and that sort of gets us towards a bigger tent. But we did not specifically say, hey, whatever TOIP or DIF or the IETF comes up with, that we are calling those verifiable credentials. So there's a nuance there that, you know, will come out in the wash, I think, but I wanted to add that to the conversation.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else have an announcement, reminder, introduction if you joined us later? All right. I think I do have Bumble Fudge. Do you have you're just plus one-ing. You're not putting yourself on the queue. Got it. Okay. So in that case, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Alex and Anchor and Ross and let you get started.
Sounds good. I will try to share my screen. Hopefully I have the rights to do that. While I pull that up, hi, I'm Anchor Banerjee. I'm the CTO and co-founder at Checked. Would love to explain and talk to about this particular idea that we've been working on. And the ask at the end is to get feedback and also to look at how this could potentially be a specification within the data resolution standard, which we think adds certain advantages that's relevant not only just for the DID method that we've been working on for the past years, but for other DID methods as well. But what we'll walk you through is the rationale or why we went about building this, and why we see it as a problem, this idea behind DID-linked resources, as well as then perhaps going into the specifics of how we think this could work with the DID resolution spec. And finally, we'll end that off with a conversation around how we use this to implement anoncreds primitives on our ledger, even though it doesn't natively handle anoncreds primitives. But feel free to ask any questions as you go along. And Alex, Ross, I'm not sure if you both are here, might lean on you both to just prompt me on any questions, as I may not be able to see this while presenting.
Yep, I'm here, Anka. Great. Yeah, if you have any questions at any point, just you can just pass to me. I'll also keep an eye on the chat to see if anything comes through, and then I'll just bring that up if it does.
Sounds good. So does this show the slideshow mode right now?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, it is. Excellent. Perfect. Okay, so the topic that we want to describe is what on earth are resources in digital identity, because that's the operative part of DID-linked resources. So what do we mean by resources? So what we mean by resources is often to process a verifiable credential, you need something else that goes along with it. And we've spent a lot of time and energy and effort, and there's a lot of community work that's gone into standardizing the DID specification, but there are other things that are also needed to process a credential. Just some simple examples might be there are schemas, there are status registries or trust registries, governance framework files. Perhaps if you get specific about anoncreds, you have things like credential definitions, and that's what we mean by resources. And resources are important because they describe something about the credential, the verifiable credential that you're presenting or you're issuing. And obviously, at the moment, some of the examples of how this is done is you might utilize an existing community-led effort like schema.org, or perhaps use those schema.org credentials and write them as a Hyperledger anoncred schema on the Hyperledger Indie Ledger. And that's important because when you want to process a credential, whether you're doing that to someone who has already seen that credential type before, but more often for people who've not seen that credential type before, it's useful to understand what are the different fields within it. And to use an analogy, in a driver's license, it's standardized what field one might mean. Field one might mean that's the driver's license ID. It's in format, name and surname. Third field means date of birth and so on. But the other thing is that schemas can also evolve over time. So if I just take the example of the UK where I live, the driver's licenses that are issued today may not be the same as driver's licenses that were issued perhaps 10 years ago. And especially at the cutover points, they may not necessarily be like for like. And the challenge that I think that creates in the verifiable credential world is obviously credentials can be reissued, but there is a question of whether the credential issuing body still exists at a certain point in time. We wanted to approach this from a lens around longevity. The typical answer that we get is it's easy, just go and reissue the credential. But when you think of things like driver's licenses that are issued with a 10-year lifespan or 10-year expiry date, passports are similar, 5 to 10 years. Or if you think of other things people have been talking about, like university degrees, there's no guarantee necessarily that the same issuer is around. So how do you understand and see how the schema has evolved over time? Because that itself could give you more information. So one of the things we wanted to handle is the same way that the DID core specification allows for querying a DID doc at a particular point in history, it should be possible to query schemas at a particular point in history. without it being a generic URL that doesn't allow you to query that. The second sort of like problem, if you're not able to fetch these historical versions, is if you just take it at face value and that's just giving the latest version of a schema or latest version of a cred def, you could potentially find situations where the user's surprised and they say, this verifiable credential is no longer valid because perhaps it's looking up schema.org/person or schema.org/event. And the definition of that has changed in the meantime in the latest spec and nobody has kept the old one around. The other sort of single point of failure that we wanted to solve is typically when, in some cases, for example, like in the Hyperledger Anon creds or Hyperledger Indy specification, schemas and cred defs are stored on the Indy ledger. But in a lot of other examples, these go to web URLs like schema.org, for example. And no matter how sophisticated this is, these endpoints could potentially go down where they're hosted. So the example that we've given over here is we've all seen major outages that have happened with large-scale providers like AWS and Azure and Facebook and Cloudflare, probably the biggest names in business that you can think of. And even during some of our testing, what we found is the schema.org endpoints themselves were down, which would result in failure. So no matter how sophisticated a technical actor you are, when you're just storing it at a single web URL, you have the same single point of failure, which is the reason why the decentralized ID methods try to focus on the decentralization aspect of how the public keys or the other elements in the DIDDOCs could be fetched to process a credential. Also, to touch upon like the contagion effects of what could be happening with cloud infrastructure, the market space on this is quite concentrated. So when someone has a problem, so for example, a lot of us around the table perhaps are using some combination of AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. And when one of these major providers have an outage, it's quite likely that everybody within a particular network has an outage. So we wanted to look at examples where how could we make it perhaps a bit more resilient, but also address that same question over time. And this is not a hypothetical scenario. The reason why we wanted to mention that this is a sort of peer-reviewed study that was done by the New York Times and the Columbia School of Journalism on a concept that is known as link rot and how do sort of links work over time. So what they did is they analyzed a sample of internet links over a 10-year period. And what they found is that 60% of those had broken by 2019 when they ran the study. And so, and especially for the further back they went, the worse the problem got. And you can sometimes see this when you click on an old newspaper link and it goes to a page that just gives a 404. Maybe not because the article doesn't exist anymore, but they've changed the way the URL structure works. I find this quite often when looking up articles that are especially old on the New York Times or on the BBC website, where it has to go off to an old copy of what the design used to work like back then. So that's an example of where this sort of link rot can creep in, especially over long ranges of time, but it could happen in the space of months, weeks, like years as well. And I think that's a concern that we wanted to tackle or address. Like, is there perhaps a better solution for this? Because otherwise, you might have the DIDs are decentralized and always resolvable, and it's distributed and multiple people have a copy, but the basic information to process a credential may not perhaps be available anymore. And then lastly, you can obviously publish on a web server, and one of the ways you can try and solve that is perhaps it's a web server that keeps multiple copies around the world. Perhaps it uses a content delivery mechanism to replicate those copies. But then you also want to understand perhaps what are the relationships and understanding in a tamper-evident fashion whether the URL that you're resolving to and the resource that you're fetching is genuinely the one that had been published by the original author or the authors of that schema or credential definition and so on. So how do you make it tamper evident and not just a web file like the dot well-known did spec, sort of like in a standard, you just publish on a web server a file called dot well-known. So if it's just a text file on a server, it's often hard to understand whether something has been tampered or not, or whether the hosting provider may have decided to shut down their business or, you know, just determine that you violate their terms of service. And so where else can this apply, perhaps, beyond the usual examples of a trust registry and a schema and so on? So one example that I think is quite powerful, and Dimitri and a lot of the others whom I just saw on the call have been working on, is visual representations of credentials. I think having a visual representation standard that can work in digital identity wallets is quite useful. Like, it's great that machines can understand what a credential looks like, but quite often you need to present a stylized version of the credential to the end user, because from a usability perspective, it makes it easier for them to pick it out of a stack of many, many different credentials. Or perhaps the example that I use is, if you have a boarding pass and it's been added to Google Wallets or Apple Wallets, just the background color might determine which queue you're allowed to join at an airport. So the challenge there is, like, the verifiable credential is not read digitally at every single touch point. Of course, the boarding pass is read when you board the plane and they need to read the data that's on it. But perhaps just to determine which queue you're supposed to join, they just look at the background color of, like, what your pass is. And I think that also starts giving interesting, like, examples perhaps of supporting visual representations across multiple platforms. Maybe there's a representation that is native to digital wallets and can be defined and shown within digital wallets. But if a user doesn't have a digital wallet, then maybe there's a fallback mechanism that says, here's the equivalent Apple Wallet pass file that describes the same background. Then the other example that came up when working with the AnonCreds community was specifically within AnonCreds, they were looking at credentials that need to be in multiple languages. So perhaps the same credential needs to be issued in French and in English. And one of the ways they were looking at handling that is looking at a specification like the overlays capture architecture. It's just a complicated way of saying you have the credential, but if you want to describe what the fields are called in different languages so that you can support internationalization in different sort of countries or different regions, then you're able to do that. And so that is, for example, another thing that could be used as a didlint resource. You obviously have the examples of status lists and Hyperledger ND revocation entries. Both are examples of something that is mentioned within a credential and it has a URL that is resolved to, and people need to fetch to process the credential itself. And so that's another example that comes into play. But you might also have things like trusted issuer lists, governance policies, documentation. I think it's actually quite flexible in how we see it. You might also have elements, for example, like logos and other brand elements. Perhaps you're not being prescriptive the way the Apple Wallet standard is, but maybe you just want to say, this is the official logo of the company. This is the font of the company, which you might be using to display on certain websites, and how you make that available. And does that always necessarily need to go back to the author's website or the company's website instead? Like, you know, perhaps there's a way this could be expressed as a file or a set of, like, you know, files or CSS elements that could be fetched. So I'll just pause there for a second on any sort of thoughts or questions. And what we'll pivot to at this point, if there aren't any questions, is to look at how we think using DID documents to control, publish, and discover these resources is something that might be very useful for the community.
Manu, it said that you've been added to the queue in SCG bot. Does that mean that you've got your hand up?
Yes, it does. I just wanted to say this is a fantastic presentation, Ankur. Really great job. I especially love that. You're making the case for, you know, why append only ledgers are like a really good solution to this problem without saying blockchain on every single slide. Like, I really like that. I think that helps a ton. Great presentation. I wanted to point out one thing that you had mentioned, which is like that rendering thing. Like, it would be really nice to render, you know, link to assets, that are effectively content addressed on Ledger or somewhere so that, it renders in the way the issuer initially intended it to render. We do have a new feature that we're considering in the verifiable credentials, working group right now. So I'll put the link in here. It's pull 1035. On a render property in a verifiable credential. And one of the things that I imagine that this property could point to is a did-linked resource, right? So I just wanted you to be aware that decision is like imminent. And if you're interested in supporting that, that would be, you know, a good thing. Same thing for anyone else here. Like, if you're interested in seeing that go in or happen in some way, please chime in on that thread. That's it.
Perfect. Were there other hands?
Yeah, I think Marcus has his hand up.
Yeah, I just want to say I also really like this, you know, on the web and when it comes to URIs, for a long time there's been this concept of persistent URIs, right, or persistent URLs, PURLs. And historically, I think they've always been realized through convention, right? So people are simply saying, here is a persistent URL, a persistent way to link to a resource. And it's just a domain name that by convention is considered to be persistent. And if you do something like that with deeds and you inherit all the properties of deeds for this idea of any kind of resource to make them persistent and decentralized and all of that, not by convention, but because of the technology, that's really powerful. And great presentation, and I look forward to the next part.
Yeah, I second that, Marcus. Carly Hutima did a really good presentation in Trust Over IP called PIDs with DIDs, which was looking at like research identifiers, which are traditionally identified using like persistent identifiers. And we both looked at how that could be augmented with using a did linked resource or a persistent did URL. So I 100% would love to sort of explore that use case a bit further. But yeah, I'll pass back over to Ankur to sort of kick off the second half here.
Sounds perfect. I'll preface this section by saying I'll use examples here of how our particular did method, which is did checked, is implementing some of this. That's just to give people an idea. But I'll also explain like how we've sort of constructed some of the work that we've done to make it more generic so that number one, it doesn't rely on it being stored on a blockchain. And number two, it doesn't rely on our specific did method. And that's partly one of the reasons why we want to chat about it at this W3C group. But to perhaps take the example through on using our did check method, and then we'll give the generic example. So one of the first things that we see happening is giving an example of, you know, how did docs are generally created at the moment. You might have an identifier, like in our case, it's did checked, like some namespace, and there's verification keys mentioned. And in the example previously, I had like the unique identifier highlighted in orange. So the way we see did linked resources in our case, what we do is we store these resources on our ledger. But the way a resource is created is that once, an issuer or an author creates a did doc, they then go back to the same VDR and they say, I'd like to publish, a resource that is tied to this specific did identifier. In our case, we call them resource collections because we foresee that like people might want to publish more than one resource within a specific did. And so an example of like what more than one resource could look like is perhaps you want to, you're using Anon creds and you want to publish a resource for a passport schema. So you create the DidDoc, and then when you submit the transaction to publish the resource itself, that request is signed using the same keys that are mentioned in the verification methods key or keys. So it adds a level of like linkage or being able to prove that this particular schema was published by the same person that created this DID document, which also then comes into play when you consider that like a particular resource itself might be updated over time. And so the resource itself has its own unique ID. You can think of this as a GitHub commit SHA, or in our case, we use unique identifiers, but this could hypothetically be anything else. But what this unique identifier does is that it uniquely identifies this specific resource and this specific version of the resource. So when you dig into the metadata that can be presented, this is an excerpt from the DID document metadata section for this particular DID. So the DID document metadata section for this particular DID contains a resource URI. It mentions which collection it belongs to, and in our case, the collection is the parent DID document that it's linked to, a specific resource ID, and friendly resource names, resource types, and resource versions. So the reason why we have the resource name is if you have more than one resource in a collection, how do you perhaps express a way to query that and fetch that? The resource version is there to give a user-specified version number. The media type and the resource type we kept as separate things because many things are JSON, but they might be JSON that needs to follow a particular syntax or schema. A good example of this is a DID document is JSON, a cred def could be a JSON, and a status list is a JSON. The verifiable credential itself is a JSON, but the media type of it is different than what is the resource type. So like it's the specific type in that case, for example, for a status list is status list 2021. So we think the resource type can be something that is, can be registered in DID spec registries, and that gives a common taxonomy for what a resource type is described at. The media type is important because when you're fetching a file, you can use that for content delivery, content acceleration, and also for the client applications to understand what sort of file they're receiving. So are you going to receive a video file, a PDF, or a JSON might determine how the client application or what sort of like submodules a client application needs to call to display that file correctly and safely, so that you don't, you essentially make this a vector for spreading malware. So in our case, the media type is determined on ledger and written there. And we also have this checksum in there. So once the file is downloaded, you can understand the checksum to verify file integrity. And the last two versions, very similar to the DID core specification, they specify a previous version ID and a next version ID. This would be the unique identifiers of the resources. For example, if I publish an update to this resource and I say the resource name remains the same, it's degree schema, the resource type is an on-cred schema, when you start building these linkages, you also make it easy to query what was the schema on, say, perhaps the 1st of July, 2019. In the same way that the DID core specification says, you can use the version time property to derive the same thing.
So I'm gonna what pause there, because Manu has his hand up. So
Just a few comments in passing. Would you mind going back to the previous slide? So I think this is great. Like all the fields there, have a purpose. The data modeling's a bit off. Like I think there are a couple of things that you could change here that would bring it much more in line with kind of the way things are modeled in both, DID documents and verifiable credentials. So things like resource URI should probably just be ID. But that's really it. I mean, everything else can probably, be changed. Resource type is really just type. It seems like that's probably what it should be. Mm-hmm. So they're tiny little adjustments here that I think could be made to bring it more in line with, the way things are modeled in DID documents and verifiable credentials. But largely, looks good.
That's a fair point. So we actually initially, I think, had it just as an ID. But the idea behind the resource URI, or I think in the newer specifications, we've called it an alternative resource URI, is to specify perhaps this is the same resource, but one of these is an IPFS link, one is a DID URL, one of these is on a content delivery network. So the idea behind the resource URI was to be able to specify perhaps other targets where the same thing is available. And it actually plays into later on, like how we think this can be decoupled, but like fully take on board, perhaps some of the other like properties can be named or renamed.
I think
interesting.
Just to pause that, I may be wrong here, Anka, but if you called it just type, then if you were doing some sort of query syntax, that could get confused with maybe something like service type, which is also called type. So if you were querying a DID document and just wanted to query by resource type, then I think having a unique delineation between resource type and other different types within the DID document could be a useful thing to have. But I might be wrong there.
Actually, thanks for reminding me. That was the real reason why we did that. Yeah, because we didn't want because the DID core specification right now gives examples like type equals X, and it often uses that to mean service type. We don't want a collision with that. But that might become a bit clearer, Manu, once we do the different kinds of syntax and query syntax. So one example of a syntax is the DID core specification says you can have path-based syntax. In our case, our path-based syntax allows UUID style identifiers for the main DID as well as IND style identifiers. And in our case, resources live on the /resources path. But this is unique to our DID method. And so we wanted to look at what could be a more generic way in which this could be resolved. And so what we think is that within the DID resolution spec, obviously you have the concept of dereferencing and having queries associated with a particular DID document. And so, for example, an entirely equivalent way of fetching the same resource, either you enter this path-based syntax, but a more generic version that could work across every DID method is to say resource name equals university degree and resource type equals anon creds cred def. The point here is that the same as the DID resolution specification, you can add other parameters on here. So for example, you could also say version time equals and then give an XML date time, and the DID method could then return to you what the resource was at that particular time. Or if you just wanted the metadata for it, perhaps you add like another query parameter and then say metadata equals true, and that should just return you the metadata. But the idea here is that like as long as this is a fully qualified thing that like resolves to one single target, you can return them the actual resource. So for example, if this was a JSON file, the result of this would be to give you that JSON file. And if you added metadata equals true, then it just gave you the metadata for that JSON file. Or in our path-based syntax, we also have /resources. And then at the end, if you add metadata, it just returns the metadata. But the idea here was that we would be able to fetch and like give the resource itself. One final thing, and then we'll probably take questions, is so the general concept here is that like it doesn't need to be DID checked, and neither does it need to be on a blockchain. So when we were speaking about the resource URI, in our case, we store on Ledger, and therefore the reference is a DID URL in there, because that's how you would fetch it from our Ledger. But hypothetically, this could also be content hash link. This could be an IPFS link through some kind of IPFS-like decentralized file discovery protocol. It could just be a normal web URL as well. Now, we do think that there's, because of the reasons highlighted earlier, it's better to not store it at one particular web server or even a single content delivery network. But the resource URI target could potentially still include that. Or this could be stored on other append-only ledgers or blockchains. The idea being that the syntax that you see on top using resources is how you discover where to redirect, where the DID resolver or the client application can redirect itself and fetch the actual file from, while the metadata of who's the creator of the schema, am I perhaps relying on a schema that has been created by someone else as the DID itself that the resource has been linked to has been deactivated? That could be a signal for perhaps the schema is not trustworthy anymore. So the rich metadata that DID documents allow is stored through the DID document and DID document metadata, while the actual resource target itself could live in many different places, or it could in fact live in multiple places. So perhaps you publish the same file on DID checked, but maybe you don't know whether checked is going to be around in 5 years or 10 years. So you also go and publish an equivalent on IPFS. And that just gives you two options on where you can go and fetch the same file. And obviously there's a checksum, which should be exactly the same across both of those storage mechanisms that you've used. So I'll pause again because that was my second section. For any questions, thoughts, comments, Alex, I think you wanted to say something.
Yeah, Dimitri had his hand up a bit earlier, so I think we'll pass over to Dimitri.
Thanks. I had two questions. One is, I'm wondering if if the resource ID is meant, or the resource URI is meant to be an alternative location. I wonder if it makes sense to reuse the also known as term from the DID spec.
We actually have done that. So I think Anchor maybe was referring to a way we did it previously, but then we did update it to also known as.
Okay, cool.
Because
also known as is what the property is called. And when I was saying alternative URI, I just meant that as a general English term.
Brilliant. Okay. And then the other question is, so the main question I have had when I heard about DID linked resource is, how is it different from defining a service endpoint type resource, right? Like, could this not be implemented as a service endpoint, or is this a more like simplification and common?
That's a great question. In fact, we did originally think of putting this when we first started working on this about a year ago. In trust over IP, we did suggest that you publish the resource and then you go mention it in the service endpoint. The challenge with that is within the service section of a DID document, you can have a unique ID. Fine. You have a service type that is typically going to be linked resource, but might not be specific enough to say this is an anon creds object or this is a status list 2021. And we also felt in the metadata that we have over here, by the way, we've made some distinctions on which ones we feel should be core properties and which of these are optional properties. So for example, we have, just to pick something random, the previous version ID and next version ID, we've got those as optional properties. And the same way the DID core spec says that these are optional, but if there's a value that you should handle this as null if there's no previous version and next version and so on. Checksum, in our case, we store a checksum, but other like mechanisms of file storage may not support that. So that might be an optional property. So we've defined some properties as core properties and other properties as optional properties. And where that sort of like, you know, comes down to is, I think, being able to, for example, have the IANA media type of a resource is extremely important because the IANA media type will then determine how the resource should be processed when a client application goes and fetches the resource. So for example, if somebody has said this is the schema, but the media type is actually an executable file, that's a red warning flag for hopefully a client application to not go and fetch what could potentially be a malicious binary. Or perhaps it's a PDF and you want to call a PDF specific display submodule. So we felt that like the service property itself couldn't necessarily capture all of that. But we certainly do think that some of this could be mentioned within the service property field. It does mean going and updating the DID doc. And where we sort of landed in the end is people could go and mention some aspects of this in the service property section, but that might make the property itself quite long or the DID document quite long. And by moving it to the metadata section instead, we still have the ability to serve that up. We still have the ability to perhaps add this richness of the other fields without necessarily introducing new fields into the core DID document itself.
Manu, I see your hand up. I just want to add one more point there quickly. I think in the service section as well, you're quite limited in what the fields are. So you've obviously got the ID and the type. But what we do in the resource metadata is we derive uniqueness from resource name and resource type. So if you were trying to lay this out in the service section, you might run into challenges with previous and next versions of the same resource because you wouldn't be able to necessarily add two resources in the service section with the same name and the same type because you might face a collision where the fragment in the ID was the same. You wouldn't allow that to happen. So you would only be able to point to one specific version of a particular resource in time, which is where I think this is a bit stronger in terms of being able to semantically point to next and previous versions. Manu, I'll go to you next.
Yeah, this is all fascinating stuff. I think that just wanted to make a couple of general points. So my understanding, based on, you know, Dimitri's question and your answer, is that you're looking for a generalized form of like this pattern can be applied to all DID methods. And if you put them, and I'm not going to, no value judgment on whether it goes in the linked resource section or a service section, but fundamentally you're trying to propose a way that could, like, all DID methods could use this. They could choose to do something else, but, you know, you've got some qualities here that, you know, are beneficial. The points that I'd like to make though, just going back to the previous statement, Alex, you were like, you know, I don't know if I'm right about this or not. I think that you're going to get some pushback on, the way you're doing some of the data modeling. But I don't think it's going to lead to like a fundamental change in the way this works, right? So I think what you're saying about there being collisions and stuff, that's raising a couple of like flags in my head of like, that doesn't sound quite right. I don't think that there could be a collision there. But clearly, I mean, you guys have thought, you know, more about, through this than, you know, most of the folks on the call. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see kind of how that conversation, comes out. But by and large, this feels like a very useful, you know, body of work. That's it.
Yeah. And Manu, maybe to pick up on that one, originally we thought of putting this resource type, like, so let's say an on-cred schema as the value that would be put under the type property in services. And the feedback we got in TOIP is that that's not a type of service. The service type should be called linked resource because the, like right now it's used, for example, for DIDCOM messaging, or it's used for linked domains, et cetera, et cetera. So the service type should say, describe the type of service rather than the type of the file or the resource that it's resolving to. And so originally we sort of come up with this as, let's put an on-cred schema as the service type. And the like feedback that we got from a couple of places, and perhaps maybe this group has a different view, is that that's incorrect. That's not the kind of taxonomy people should be using for services. That like taxonomy should say linked resource, the same way that it might say DIDCOM messaging. And the you need to handle the metadata for this differently. So I think that might, like, does that sort of like give you a context of the, like, so we originally did start where you were thinking and then we walked back on it. But it's useful.
Yeah, it let me suggest that there's no one right way to do this.
Yeah.
I think that's what that you know, that's where the conversation will go. I don't necessarily, you know, disagree with the feedback that you got, but I think it's missing some important nuance, which is why, you know, the way that you've constructed it right now is a fine way to do it. But you can also construct it as a service endpoint. You can do it both ways. And that's, yeah. I expect where, you know, working group discussion is going to, you know, spend a decent bit of time is which way makes more sense. That's it.
And I think where we landed on this is we actually wanted to say that this kind of query-based syntax or the path-based syntax or these, like define it as a service endpoint and then have a relative ref, they're all equally valid as long as they just resolve to the same thing. So I think from the perspective of this group, what we are looking at, like standardizing and what we mean by didlink resources is the URL type that you have on top. Because this would then become a common way in which people could say, I want to fetch a schema, but I don't necessarily want to figure out what is the specific Hyperledger indie transaction to do it, or what's the specific checked like method transaction to go read this. So by moving it to the layer of the did resolution step, this could then resolve ultimately to an IPFS URL. This could ultimately resolve to something else, and that fetches a resource. But this kind of syntax that we've described using queries then becomes a common way that every did method could perhaps resolve to. So for example, perhaps the schema is published on a different did method than the one you're issuing on, and that would make this possible. So perhaps the creator of the schema published it on Ion, but the issuer of the schema is on did checked or vice versa. You could still do this and resolve to those elements. And so it just makes it broader and not just for dids and did documents. Any other questions, thoughts, comments? Marcus, obviously, like we've been speaking with you a fair amount as well, as the one of the main people behind the did resolution spec.
Yes, we have spoken about this. I think this is really useful. I'm very excited about it. We discussed a little bit what the best way would be to fit this into the did resolution specification, right? The did resolution obviously has hooks and extension points where new query parameters or new did URL patterns can be plugged in. The one question that we discussed a little bit was whether or not the actual functionality, the actual meaning and the referencing logic of these parameters would be described in did resolution itself, or if that would be described in a separate specification, but then as an extension to the referencing algorithm that would then be more generic in did resolution, right? Like, is this actual part of the did resolution specification, or is this some separate specification which extends the did resolution or did URL dereferencing algorithm? I feel like this could potentially be a very fundamental and very core piece of functionality that could be in did resolution itself, but that's something then for a future working group probably to decide.
When we were proposing this work item, there was also some like discussion around other implementations of how this was working. I see Joe, Andrew on the call. I was wondering if you saw any, like, a lot of synergies between this approach and your approach, and maybe how you thought about this going forward as well in conjunction with what you've already done. I see you come off mute, Joe, but I can't hear you.
I was doubly muted with my headset. Yeah, I think it's a good attempt at solving a similar problem as what we did with the Did Cosmos work.
You're back on mute again. I think might
be fairly similar. I'm sorry. Are you not able to hear me? Hello.
Yeah, you just cut out.
Just cut out.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So I think there are a lot of similarities. The one thing that caught me as you were walking through it today was.
Joe, you cut out again.
Yeah. Right at the, like, at the moment where I was, like, hanging on to hear.
I think I'll just try and back up a little bit. I think the best practice with regard to sort of schemas and versioning is going to be to make them and treat them as immutable, which is what the COM system did.
So much of that.
This application, is it still breaking up?
Yeah, it is.
Kinda. It just seems like it auto-mutes you after a certain number of seconds or something.
Yeah, it's weird. And then, just a short idea is there's some things we learned from COM from having immutable identifiers that uniquely defined the particular interface for all time rather than having named schemes that do change or schemas that do change. So.
Yeah. So our take on this was we should allow different DID methods to, because there will be opinionated approaches on how this is done. This never changes. The unique ID, let's say I publish a new version of the same schema, this is a never changing resource. So when, let's say I'm given a credential, the credential schema might be specified as this. But we then have the additional endpoint, which is slash metadata, that allows the person who's doing the verifier or the recipient of this credential to perhaps traverse up and say, does this particular schema or resource that I fetched, does it have a new update to it, or does it perhaps have previous versions? So the query-based syntax allows you to do that. The query-based syntax allows you to just fetch the latest, or to use the same same sort of technique that was used in DID core. If there's a version time property added to this, then that could also be one way. Perhaps it's expressed within a credential itself to point to something specific. But that's the reason why we thought of this path-based syntax, because these UUIDs will never change for that specific version of the resource. And, but if you wanted the flexibility of going and discovering, you just look up the metadata for that DID doc. You can see if there are previous or new versions, and using the previous and the next version IDs, you could traverse them. Or you could just ask a resolver to give you the version at a particular time.
Also, just kind of closing thoughts as we're at the hour. I just wanted to say, Manu, others, if you want to sort of play around with DID-linked resources and test our theories in practice in like a sandbox environment, this is all available to currently use on Checked Mainnet and Testnet. So if you want to get set up and play around with it and test some hypotheses, happy to help there as well.
Yeah. Great. And mainly we want to say this is work in progress. The feedback is super helpful. Perhaps we can and none of this is necessarily, we think, set in stone. So really appreciate the feedback and however we can modify this. I think our objective was to try and propose something that could really give a powerful and flexible way that every DID method could express what these resources are and the metadata behind it.
Thank you so much, Anchor. This was really helpful, and I really appreciated the presentation and the way you approached it. It was very accessible for me, so thank you. And I know, so we've left this as a proposed work item. It sounds like from the chat, I'm seeing a lot of support and this conversation has been really good. So let me circle with Harrison and Mike, and then we'll sort of understand what the next steps are to sort of move it to the next place and get this work started here in the CCG. So thank you all. I'm sorry we're a little bit over time, so I'm going to wrap us up and look forward to seeing you all next week. Thank you.
Thanks all.
Yeah, thanks everyone.